So, welcome to another episode. Today we have Henry Woodman on, who's an hedonistic and opportunistic entrepreneur. I mean, it's a bit of a mouthful, and I'll let Henry explain to you exactly what that means.
Yeah, I like that. You have to kind of articulate hedonistic, opportunistic. It's kind of a, it's a tongue twister, I guess. You're right. At the time, I really wouldn't have given much thought to that. But and when I look back, and some of the things that I have done have generally been in the pursuit of my own, needs, wants, happiness, or finding opportunities in meandering around. And I'll give you one example of many. But when I was in college, I was addicted. I was painfully addicted to a video game machine called Pac-Man. Right? I mean, I had calluses on my thumb and forefinger. Fingers. I had the algorithm down. I had the high scores everywhere. And there I was one day as a sophomore in college, and I'm in a laundromat. And I don't want to study, of course. And I'm jonesing for Pac-Man. And I'm thinking, man, this place could use a video game machine, And so I decide, instead of thinking to myself, oh, wow, somebody should do something about that, I go back to my dorm room. I live in Tucson, University of Arizona. I call every laundromat in the phone book, and I asked them. I said, "Do you guys have video game machines?" And they would all say no. And eventually, I would say, "Would you like some? I mean, I share the revenue with you." And sure enough, a couple said yes. So I'm thinking, okay, cool. And I don't know where I was going to get the money because I didn't have any money. I was a college student, so I took my tuition money. I went to an auction. I bought one machine that was used. Back in the day, they had these video arcades, and in the back of the arcade were machines nobody played. And eventually, they'd get rid of them at an auction just to get them off their books, right? So I bought these machines for cheap. I put them in a laundromat, and sure enough, captive audience. They got a pocket full of quarters. They would play the machines, and within a couple of weeks, I got my money back. And so then I bought another one, and eventually kept buying more. And what I would do is I would rotate them around because, once you go in there and you figure out, man, this thing's a piece of junk, right? They'd come back a couple of weeks later and there's a new machine and they're like, ah, finally they figured out to get a better machine on the until they realized that was a piece of junk as well. But ultimately, that was the first sort of hedonistic pursuit, which ironically was challenging because, even though I wanted it for my own needs to play video games when I was waiting for my laundry to wash and dry. I couldn't play the games because I would be taking quarters out of my own pocket from people that were there playing the game. So it was interesting. But that was kind of the first idea of, wow, here's a problem that I can solve because it's my problem and I'm a hedonist and I want to play video game machines in the laundromat. And that was kind of the first venture. So then I go to, if you ask me questions along the way, or I'll just keep rambling on.
I mean, to be fair, like I was just waiting for you to sort of get to the end of that little story. But I mean, there's a few bits in there that I think it is quite important, really. One is that you got this opportunity, part of the hedonistic, opportunistic entrepreneur, from something that you enjoy. And I think that's a real important lesson for a lot of people. They'll go on to Reed.com, Indeed.com, and they'll look at the highest paying job that's on there. And they will think, well, I want to apply for this job. What do I need to get there? Now, in fairness, there is some merit to that in some respects. Like what I need to work out what the roadmap is to get to this sort of job. But what you also need to understand is, are you going to enjoy that job? Are you going to be any good at that job? Are you a round hole trying to stick one of those square pegs into it? And you understand
Yeah.
something you're interested in a lot better than something you're not interested in. If you're having to read these reports that you have no affinity with at all, you're not going to be very good at your job generally. You have to have an interest for it in order to be good at it. I think for you, because you played the game, you understood the mindset of a gamer in respect of after they realize this game's not that great, they're not going to continue to put their money into it, which is why instead of getting new machines, you just rotated the existing machines around, which is obviously a very clever idea. And the other thing that you realized
Right.
was that, coming back to the drug dealer scenario, is don't get high on your own supply in respect
That's
of
exactly right. Well,
putting quarters in.
I mean, I couldn't agree more. It's not that I methodically thought this through. It was a matter of, first of all, if you're in an area where you know something about it, like at this point, I knew something about video games because I was playing video games, right? I would go to 7-Elevens and I would go to malls and play in the arcades, right? And here I was trapped in a laundromat thinking, okay, I have a problem, right? Okay, so that was my knowledge of the space. Not like I would have gone out and go, okay, what area could use, video games? I wouldn't have known had I not had that thing. And then the secondly, I knew I wouldn't have played many of the games that I bought simply because they weren't appealing. They weren't the Missile Commands or the Ataris or the Froggers or Pac-Mans that I loved, right? And so I knew that moving them around would spark the interest of the people who were regulars. You wash your clothes once or twice a month, right? Depending on how dirty you are. And I took advantage of that. And even more so when I left and I moved to Los Angeles. And again, most of my life has been, when I look back, connecting the dots, having been at a specific place and time, knowing something about another business, and then pivoting into that. So I decide, I want to go to Los Angeles. My dream is to produce and direct movies. I thought that would be cool, right? So I decide, okay, I need a little bit of money to get to Los Angeles. Let me just sell the business and have them pay me over a couple of years, just a couple hundred bucks every month until they pay it off, because they didn't have any money either. And it was great, right? Because that meant I wouldn't have spent it all as a young kid partying in Los Angeles. And so, I go to Los Angeles, I open up a newspaper and it says, Game show contestants wanted, press your luck. And I'm like, okay, I'm the luckiest person I know. I'm going to go on this game show, right? So, of course, I go on the second Press Your Luck game show they ever aired. I win some money. And I'm thinking, even better, I don't have to work for a couple of months, which I didn't. I was too busy partying and, having fun. Another mistake. But the idea that I was smart enough to sell the business with, recurring revenue and have them pay me out of the profits for a couple of years was helpful to me in not having, stumbled on myself and gone broke in LA in the first couple of months.
It's the same reason that
So
businesses
moving on.
now like subscription models, because they know instead of one up lump sums here and they can't forecast, they know every month they're getting $20 from this person, $100 from this person, $50 from this person every month. And that's where a lot of businesses are trying to go down that route now. Even if you're buying a one-off purchase, a lot of businesses prefer you to pay over monthly for interest free for 2 years, 3 years, because it allows for positive forecast. And it's good that you mentioned moving onto something different and parting with that previous business or previous chapter of your life. And I think that's something that people don't do enough of. I think there's a quote something along the lines of, "Don't hold on to a boiling kettle just because of how long it took you to boil." People think, "Well, it took me 10 years to get here, and I've got this kettle now boiling. I don't want to let go of it anymore." But sometimes it's a case for, this chapter's now over. I need to part ways and see
Okay.
where the next journey takes me. We change as individuals, don't we, over time. I'm not the same person I was at 15, at 20, 25. And my
No,
goals and
absolutely.
what's meaningful to me now is very different than it was back then. Some people become less materialistic, some people become more materialistic, some people enjoy this career path or industry, and then they change and they then enjoy something else. Maybe they want to spend less time with family as they're building a business, and as they grow older, maybe it's the case they want to spend more time with the kids and the grandkids. So those drivers can help to dictate the behavior that we just sort of practice on a day-to-day basis, which then ends up showing results later on. So you've obviously moved to a different industry. Can you talk a little bit about that journey as to where you are at this point? I know you've got a few projects ongoing at the minute.
Yeah, no, and that's been my entire life. If you would have told me, 40 years ago, you were going to build and sell a tech company, I would have said, a what? I don't know anything about technology, right? And business, right? But so along the lines, and I agree with you, I wouldn't look at, oh my God, this is where I can make the most amount of money. I may not be happy and I don't like numbers, but I want to be an accountant or whatever it is, right? But the reality is, when I hear people say, find your passion, I'm like, not always, because if my passion is to be an artist or to be a musician and they don't get a lot of money, then you may starve. So find something you enjoy that you do well and you can make money at, right? And hopefully there's some passion involved in there. So my idea was to move to Los Angeles to produce and direct movies. That didn't happen. I did like to travel, so I ended up on a travel film crew as what's called a PA, a production assistant, right? So after a couple of years, I go to sound guy and eventually I'm producing travel films, right? Now we're talking the late 80s and I'm producing travel films in Chile and Latin America. And Chile goes from Pinochet's dictatorship to a democracy, right? And I realize, because I'm in touch with the production company that did the support services in Chile, that they now have new television stations and a new TV network. And what do you need? Content, right? New TV station, new country, new democracy. They need content. So I get on a plane, I fly to Chile, I have these guys set up a meeting with the new TV network, and I pitch a game show idea that I ripped off from a US show. Within 3 months, we were on the air in Chile, and I'm the executive producer of a game show in Chile for the younger demographic, which was kind of like, hey, opportunity. I can pitch myself in Chile as a US game show contestant, and there you go. And that leads to the next pivot. So I'm in Chile, and I realize I could do well here. I could live the rest of my life in Chile. And then I start to think, well, if I really do well here, I probably have to live in a house with barbed wire. And if I do really well, then I have to have guards and a bulletproof car and stuff like that, because you fear for your security in some of these countries where you make a lot of money. So I'm thinking, I don't know, I want to go back to the US. I'd rather be a middle class citizen and live amongst them in my anonymity, right? And so around that time, somebody hands me a CD-ROM and they give me a virtual reality tour, which means on the computer, I can look up and down and all around a room and a destination. I thought that was the coolest thing ever. Right. So I thought, all right, well, I know travel films and I know that I don't have to travel with five guys and 17 pieces of luggage. I'm going to set up a company and I'm going to do virtual reality tours. And I called it World Travel Vision. So for years, I'm producing these CD-ROMs. I would give them to hotels and destinations that they would promote at trade shows and conferences. Now we're talking mid-90s, right? So eventually, after a couple of years, they say to me, how do we get these virtual tours on this new World Wide Web thingy, the internet? I'm like, I don't know, send them a CD-ROM. And they're like, yeah, Henry, they don't know what to do with it. There are no standards. I'm like, all right, let me see what I can do to help, right? Again, I have no idea about technology. So I think, let me help you deliver the virtual tours to the travel sites, right? Now, that's where the SaaS model comes in, the software as a service, where you get paid every month. Then I realized, okay, being a production company of virtual tours, it's a race to the bottom. Any kid with a computer and a camera is a competitor, right? Holding the keys to the distribution, now you get paid every month to distribute it to the travel site. So we go from virtual tour production, and then distribution. And then when I'm in the distribution, I realize a bigger problem is the need to have. You need to have photos. You don't necessarily have to have virtual tours. You need to have the photos. And that too was a problem. Had I not been in that world and introduced the links to the virtual tours, I would not have known that there was a problem with photos, because the old systems that would give you the rate and the availability, the booking systems, they never had photos. You'd go to a brick and mortar travel agencies and there'd be cryptic text, no pictures, right? So I realized, okay, so let's pivot again. This is the third pivot. Go from production to production and distribution, then distribution of virtual tours, now distribution of photos. And eventually I get rid of production of virtual reality and distribution of virtual reality altogether, and built the business over 25 years. Now, if you go to any travel website on the planet and you see pictures of hotels and resorts on any travel site, that would have come from my old company, ICE Portal. So you can see the progression. I would never have known the travel industry, online travel industry for that matter, had a problem unless somebody asked me, and then I'm helping them, and then I realize, oh, there's a bigger problem, and oh, I could do that. And that's kind of how it leads and
Yeah,
how it
I mean,
goes.
the good thing is you don't always need to know every single step. You need to know sometimes the direction that you're going in, and you understand and have faith in yourself to be able to work out problems thereafter. So you're like, okay, well, I'm going down this path, first pivot. It's not quite working, or I want to sort of change my trajectory, pivot this way. You're still in the same overall direction, but you're sort of chopping and changing what you're doing essentially. But for me, there's still an underlying gaming slash screen underpin. Because you've had the Pac-Man stuff, and then you had the game show. And virtual tours, although it's not a game per se, it's still very, digitally, virtually. So maybe that's your thing, essentially.
Well, initially when I started the company, I mean, if we look back, I never really had a vision statement. I had no idea what that meant at the time, but the idea was help travel consumers better see and select their hotel rooms, right? That was kind of the goal. Now that helped with the pivot as well. But early on, I didn't know what I didn't know, which in the at the time was helpful, because I didn't know technology, I didn't know how to write code, I didn't know business well. My production was a beginning, middle, and an end. That was generally how things were sold, right? And so when I get to an ongoing concern like a business, then people would say things like, you're gonna hire the best people. I'm thinking, I can't even afford the best people. I can barely afford myself. What are you talking about, right? You need to have KPIs. And I'm thinking, yeah, sure, I don't even know what a KPI is, right? You need a good culture and a vision. And I'm like, I don't know what any of those things are, right? I go back to school in my 50s, I might add, to get my MBA in entrepreneurship to learn how to build and scale a business. And it was helpful because when you're in the middle of it, like I went to college, I don't remember anything that I studied or learned because I was partying and having fun. But now I'm an entrepreneur and I'm learning all these things. And I'm like, okay, I see how I can apply this to my everyday concern, my business, right? And it was very helpful in understanding the concepts and integrating them in, when they talk about lean management and Kanban and stuff like that from the Toyota way. I get it. I can see how that goes up, and I see how I can do a lean management implementation into the business. So a lot of that was helpful, but you learn by making those mistakes, going over the hurdles, climbing the mountains, making the mistakes is really okay. What did we do wrong? How do we figure it out? How did we not get this right? And what do we do? And what's the customer want? And that was, there's a lot of hard lessons learned.
I mean, you need to have mistakes, though. Nothing's ever going to go right first time, every time. And this is what we were talking off air, weren't we, about people want success straight away without any input from themselves, without any learning, without any mistakes. And that's just unfortunately not the way of the world. And it comes back to the fears people have, their fear of being judged by others, fear of failure, all of this sort of stuff. And the fact that you've gone back to study at age 50 says to me that you've thought, well, what do I need to do to improve my situation? There's no feelings, and maybe I might be wrong about, oh, well, what about John, who I went to school with, might think, well, he's going back to school at 50, or anything like that. It's actually focused on where you are now. What are the things I need to do to get to the next stage, regardless of what anyone else thinks about the situation? So I think that's a really, really good mindset to have.
Yeah. Well, Jivan, there's a lot to unpack there. First of all, I agree. I think marketing has skewed our reality thinking, anybody who starts a business is going to walk away, a successful, happy person. And that's not really the case. It's a lot of work, it's a lot of dedication. You're the first one in, you're the last one out, and you're certainly the last one to get paid. And my interest really in going back to school was, again, I had a huge fear factor of failing because I didn't know what I didn't know. And in order to be honest with myself, I'm like, all right, well, if people are telling me I got to do these things, I don't know what these things are. And sometimes I'm too afraid to ask. Let me just go back and learn this stuff. And, ironically, we had a competitor. They had raised a ton of venture capital, I mean, tens of millions of dollars. And we had raised nothing because If I knew how to raise money, I would have, but I didn't know how to. So I figured, let me just bootstrap it along the way. They had signed exclusive agreements with the GDSs. So I thought, you know what? I'm pretty much screwed. One company, that was Starwood, said, "We like you guys. We see the writing on the wall with a potential monopoly. Can you guys do photos as well?" Because we were the virtual tour thing. They bought another partner of ours that they were doing photos, we were doing the, so we said, yes, we lied. So we had to essentially hobble our way through the pictures. And I knew I had 5 years to figure this out. So I figured, well, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it right. I'm going to listen to the customers. I'm going to go figure out how to run a business and how to properly scale it so that when the opportunity comes and the exclusives end, we will be there with the product rating. So 5 years later, when the exclusives ended, we went from 1,000 hotels, that was Starwood, to 22,000 in less than a year because we called them all the time and we said, listen, if it changes, what needs to happen? What are you missing? What's not working? What do you want? And we implemented all of that stuff and we were ready and rear to go and ready to scale as well. So, we were very fortunate, but also tenacious to just hang around for those 5 years. And our competitor was trying to put us out of business with multiple lawsuits. We had just, oh my God, it was a lot of sleepless nights.
The thing is, and again, this is coming back to what people's perception of things are. What they don't realize is that the higher you get up any sort of hierarchy or ladder, the bigger the monsters are there. You know, if you're the president of a country or prime minister of a country or whatever, you've got people below you trying to pull you down. You've got people equal to you in other countries trying to pull you down. You're responsible for huge life-changing decisions that are going to change decisions for people immediately, but maybe for their children and their children's children. So people want the status of these big jobs and being Mr. Entrepreneur and all these sorts of things, but they're not able to deal with the stress and the responsibility of making these types of decisions. They can't even pick what they want for dinner. Oh, what do you want for dinner? Oh, I don't know. What do you want? Oh, I don't know. What do you want? But yet they want this lifestyle without the backup of being that person. It's like a trust, you know, a trust fund person who's been given a trust fund by their father, and they're multimillionaires. You know, they've got a Ferrari, Lamborghini, whatever. They're wearing nice suits, but as soon as you speak to them, you can tell that they haven't got that fundamental growth beneath that materialistic surface. And really,
Yeah,
that should be what you're trying to develop underneath, because that will show on the surface afterwards. It's like a plant. When it's under the compost, under the soil, it's what you do with the watering and what you've put in the soil that's going to grow into something and flourish. And that's what we should focus on.
listen, I agree. First of all, to your last point, just plant a lot of seeds and hopefully, some, and you continue to water them and nurture them and they will grow. But ultimately, as I had alluded to before, the marketing tells us that, everybody can do it. Not everybody is cut out to be an entrepreneur. It's a very, very scary ride if you're willing to take it with risks. And you know what? When you're younger, at least when I was younger, and I had no family, I had no home, I had no mortgage, I didn't really have a lot to, I didn't have far to fall, right? As you get older and you have a house, I literally mortgaged my house and got a loan against my house to pay the employees to survive. I didn't have a plan B. If I would have gone bankrupt, which I was on the verge a couple of times, I would probably be saying, "Do you want fries with that burger?" Right? I didn't know what else I would be doing. But the reality is, looking back, I think not knowing how close to the edge I would become, that I actually did it, because I wouldn't have done it if I would have known where it was going. It was a scary thing. But I think people look at it and go, yeah, I want that lifestyle. I want to, work less hours and travel when I want and make all kinds of money. And like, hey, yeah. I remember the first probably 5 or 10 years I got paid less money than I was making before running my business, right? It was only at the end and then selling the business that helped, reward all of that. labor. But marketing also has a saying, you know what? You're entitled to more. You should get more money. You should get more pay and more vacation and more benefits. And you can work from home. And look, there are people in other countries going, hey, listen, I'll work twice as hard for half as much. And we don't get that, right? And I also fear moving forward that AI is going to really disrupt the employment industry and how people work and what they do and how they do it. I think it's
Yeah, 100%.
challenging.
I made a video on this. So this podcast does obviously conversations with people like yourself, but also individual episodes. And I talked about AI and some of the challenges that it's going to bring. Obviously, displacement of jobs is number one. But the problem is that after time, much like, the calculator has reduced our ability to do mental arithmetic. After time, if we use self-driving cars for two or three generations, do you think that people will lose the ability to drive well? And this is going to be a big problem, I think, over because at the moment, AI is a great tool because people still understand how to do things and it's using AI as a tool. But some of the kids growing up now, they are just getting AI to write their homework, write their whole dissertation and then editing that. Now, you could argue actually it's a good learning tool because you still have to go through and read it. But there's a difference between creating something and editing something. And I think that it could have a massive implication on our cognitive ability as well, long term, as well as obviously the short term economic impacts of job displacements, et
Without,
cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
well, I mean, listen, talking about cars, I mean, first of all, if you really get down and you look at the cost that you're paying for a car and insurance and gas and maintenance and all of that stuff, and then you say, okay, how much does it really cost per hour of my driving the car, right? Maybe there's 2 hours or 3 hours in an entire 24-hour day that that car is being used. Okay, what would it cost me to take an Uber? And would it be cheaper? And many times it would be, right? And then you turn around and say, okay, fast forward, let's say 15, 20 years, where nobody owns a car, but there are all these autonomous cars that you call when you need for a transportation. Okay, I don't need to drive. I just need to get on my little app and call the car. The car's there. I get in, I go where I need to go. It takes me, I call another car, picks me up, but boom, I'm like, okay, at a fraction of the cost, right? And I agree. Is it dumbing us down? Probably, but I'm still amazed at the people who can write the code and figure these things out. To me, that's genius. But there's going to come that tipping point where AI is going to be doing everything for everybody. And unless we find a way to have the guardrails, could be dangerous. You know,
Yeah.
even I am considering AI for my next venture.
Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly. And the thing is if AI stays around and it continues to do stuff for us, it builds us houses because you can program and get a machine to do it. The problem is, if anything ever happens, you lose things that have been passed down. Like obviously in the past, it's well, my great grandma showed me this recipe, and we passed it down. We've passed down information. I train you. I'm a plumber. I've trained my kid up to be a plumber, and we pass on information that way. Problem is, if there's ever a way that, or if there's ever a time that society sort of falls back into back to an older time, war might happen or whatever. It's going to be difficult. I mean, it'll be difficult anyway. But I think that if people still understand how to do things themselves, it's going to be better than having everything reliant on AI, possibly. But
Well, listen, I think that the new, I guess, I don't want to say the new focus, but if I were looking at the future and saying, how can I do things that let's say I'm good with my hands or I'm good with figuring out how things work, right? Plumbing or electricity or one of these manual labor jobs, man, they get paid really well. And if you fast forward and you go, how easily would it be for AI to get rid of them? Not really. They're going to be around for a while. So if I'm thinking about some, blue collar work, maybe white collar, like, lawyer, accountant, or some marketing consultant, I would be more concerned. I would think, let me start a little business and see how I can scale. And then you use AI for some of the back end stuff, right? And collaborate with other plumbers and stuff. And then I have my little network of plumbing because everybody's going to call me when they have a toilet that needs unplugging or something, right? And that's not something that AI is going to fix. So there's certain things you want to look at and go, okay, where do I go? What do I do? And how do I string them together? Because one of the things that I find interesting when I look back is if I knew then what I know now, I probably would not have started a business. And especially now with all the baby boomers that are retiring and they have businesses that have been established for a couple of decades, making a couple $100 a year, if you will. They just want to get out. And you could probably buy them cheaper, buy them by paying them with the profits over time. So you'd pay like next to nothing. Start a business, lawnmower service or something service. There's oodles of them, right? And string them together and say, look, if I have five, then I don't need five different accounting programs. I don't need five different bookkeepers. I can consolidate that and save a little. So if they make two, 300 a piece, I make 400 a piece and I get five, because that's $250,000 a year. Okay. You start to think like that and you're like, okay, that doesn't cost me a lot. I can tell the owner, because if I were an old guy and I had a business, I'm like, look, you pay me in the profits. If it doesn't work, I get my business back. So it's a win-win-win. And they're like, yeah, great. So now I've got annuities coming in every year for the next 5 years or something. Good for me, right? And I also, because I have a vested interest, I give the new entrepreneur my insights on the business, right? Because I know the customers, I know the way things work, I know the books. I mean, that would be my advice to, myself 30, 40 years ago.
I mean, it's life's easy in hindsight, isn't it? But that's what makes life great, because we then, for the next chapter, can take everything we've learned, and future decisions are better than decisions we made previously. And I think, as you said, if you're buying a business, you've already got a lot of the legwork done for you, and you can then look at it from a fresh perspective and say, well, if we cut costs here, if we maybe expand into this market, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, we could grow it twofold, threefold, tenfold over X number of years.
And even not tenfold, if you say, yeah, I can look at your business. I hate to say this, but you've been keeping all your records on books. There's this new thing called a computer, right? And we can consolidate all of these things into the cloud, and then we can have it automated via AI. And they're like, oh, wow. So, I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility that people who have been doing things for 20, 30 years haven't changed much, right? It's working. I'm making enough money to pay my bills and live happily, and I don't care, so what? And now I'm too old to run it, and who the hell wants this thing? Somebody does, but somebody should also say, how do I make it more streamlined? How do I lean it up a bit and consolidate efficiencies of scale with two or three or five others,
Yeah, 100%. And there's so much opportunity out there to do many things, whether it's starting a business, whether it's buying an existing business and scaling it. You can write books, or, as you're doing, turning a book into a TV program. There's so many options. And what a lot of people don't also understand is they see someone like yourself or John or Tom, whoever, and they see the life they've built, and they try to imitate that exactly and say, well, that's worked for him, I'm going to try and copy. It doesn't necessarily work like that. There's infinite different ways to live and make money, etc. And your skill sets aren't exactly the same as that person's skill sets. Especially
Right.
with today, people can change careers so frequently, so often. It's a case of skill stacking, isn't it? You can say, well, I've got this particular skill as well as these four or five skills, because I know you speak a few languages, don't you? French, Spanish, English.
Yes.
Yeah. So you might be the only guy in the world who's been in tech who speaks English, Spanish, French with a history of gaming, and that's your, you've got a very unique perspective. Someone might be very similar, but with a slightly different background, without the languages, or maybe with something else. So you have to actually sit down and think, what skill sets do I have? What resources do I have available? And what's the best way for me to move forward with that current skill set?
And I can say matter-of-factly that, because you look at a lot of opportunities, right? You always say yes to opportunities that present themselves till finally you find one that you can do really well at or win. And then you have to say no to everything except that one, right? Now, when you say skill set, listen, I just happened to follow the opportunities that I saw in front of me because I happened to be at the right place at the right time and stumbled on something, right? Because if you would have said, hey, there's an opportunity here, I knew nothing about certain things. But oh, now that I've been in the space, and I know production or I know that distribution of virtual tours, and then I know there's a problem with photos and I know how to get things onto a database. Okay. So it wasn't like I had this magical idea, it evolved from sort of connecting the dots along the way. I don't ever think that I would have imagined where that would have taken me unless I happened to immerse myself into that world, And even now, like you had mentioned, my next step, the last thing I would ever tell somebody to do is to do what I'm doing. I'm just doing it because it's a passion that I had 40 years ago that I'm now, going full circle to close that chapter and try to fulfill.
Yeah, it's a case of personality types as well. A lot of some people are planners. They need everything to be planned out, and other people go with the flow. And both can be very successful. Like with authors, people like J.K. Rowling are planners when they write. They plan the whole story out and then they write the book. Someone like Stephen King is a pantser, I think they call it, where it's you just sit down and you start writing. Both are successful, both world famous authors, there are more than one way to skin a cat.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, it's a lot like when people talk in entrepreneurship, when they talk about your vision, right? Where do you want to go, right? And let's use the analogy of if I know I want to go, I live here in South Florida. If I want to go to New York, okay, I know where the destination is. That's New York. Same with the vision. I want to end up in this mindset, fit my financial freedom, my whatever, right? So let's say I want to go from Miami to New York, but along the way, that's my goal, that's my vision. There's roadblocks and there's detours. And I'm like, okay, so I have to go out and, pivot around. But ultimately, I want to end in New York. I don't just go on the road and I say, okay, I want to end. I don't know where I'm going. I'm just going to drive. I want to be somewhere like New York. And next thing you know, I'm in LA. I'm like, oh, I don't know how that happened. I'm on the other side of the country, right? So if you kind of have an idea of where you want to go, where this ends, then you will find along the way it's not a straight line. Obviously, it's pivoting and up and down and trials and tribulations, but eventually you know where the goal is, right? And that's like the J.K. Rowling's. I know kind of the vision of how it is. I don't think she would have ever imagined it would have been, the Harry Potter series would have been the monster that it was. She was just writing for her kids and, have fun, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm a strong believer in that as well, where you have to have something you're aiming towards. And as you said, along the way, there can be obstacles. You might fancy stopping off for a burger somewhere along the way to New York, but you still know sort of the direction you're heading. And actually, what can happen in some cases is halfway through the journey, you can realize that you know where you are, and actually the destination is now changed because of where how things have progressed along the way. But there's still a new destination that you're aiming towards. It doesn't have to still be the same destination. And that's what people need to also understand. Your destination that you've got in your mind now wasn't the same as it was 20 years ago. But there was destinations along the way that you sort of managed towards, if that makes sense.
And your mindset changes as well. I mean, everything you believe and everything you think. And listen, as the world changes and the way AI and social media is changing our mindsets, I think we will have different value systems moving forward as well.
100%, 100%. So what are you working on currently then? What's the new project and what's the new destination?
So, 40 years ago, when I was in Los Angeles dreaming of getting into the film and television industry, my dad had written a tribute to a friend. It was a love story. He didn't plan on publishing. He was moving. My sister sees this manuscript in the garage and she asks about it. He says, ah, it's this love story. I wrote a tribute to a friend. She reads it. She loves it. She calls me up. She says, you've got to read this. It would make a great movie. And I'm like, oh, geez, okay. Yeah, sure. Send it to me. She sends it to me. I read it. I could not put it down. And so I call my dad and I say, what are you doing with this? He says, nothing. I said, can I buy the rights? He says, sure. So I buy the rights. And then I'm thinking, how nepotistic of me. This is my dad, right? Maybe I'll give it to a friend who's at the time he was producing a movie. Let me see what he thinks. And he says, Henry, I'm in the middle of something. I'm like, take your time. I'm not in a rush. 3 days later, he calls me up. He says, this is amazing. We are meant to do this. And of course, he ends up getting challenged with the distribution of his film. I end up going to Chile to game shows. And make a long story short, we've stayed in touch for 40 years. I said, listen, I'm going to sell my tech company. I'm going to get the book together. I'm going to publish it. And then we're going to develop this concept into a TV series. So you're saying, okay, what is all this? The name of the book is called The Reincarnation of Marie. It's based on a historical truth where Marie is a real woman in the late 1800s named Marie Bashkirtseff. She wrote a journal between 14 and 24. She died at 24 of tuberculosis. 2 years after her death, her mother publishes the journal. It becomes an international bestseller. 70 years later, Guy picks up the book and he finds himself falling in love with the author. After a while, he realizes, oh my God, this is crazy. I've fallen in love with a dead person. No, this is not right. And eventually he finds her reincarnation, right? That's the simplistic premise of the book. The series is called Slippin', which is a play on slipping through time, is a much deeper dive into the reincarnation of the lives in her era, in Marie's time, and the current protagonist, his name is Jonathan, and how they intertwine. And these stories of karma, sins of the father, is reincarnation actually real, or are we slipping through time? Is it a metaverse, or is all this shit made up in our mind? Now, obviously, we don't answer the questions, but it poses the questions on life. It's like, what is it all about? You know, we talk about these things, but what's out there? And that's kind of the woo, right? So the goal is really to get, you know, what's called a Bible, you know, get a showrunner and director and cast and put all these elements together and then take that Bible to a streamer and sell it. Now, this could take anywhere from a year or longer, right? And then I'm thinking, well, you know, AI text to video is getting so good that if it takes me 2 or 3 years to get this on the market, what happens in 2 years with text to video and AI? It's going to be really good and a fraction of the cost and much quicker. So do I sit there and start planting those seeds? I don't know, right? So now my partner and I are toying with the idea of planting seeds in the old traditional school of the production world, and also looking into what's happening in the AI text to video world because it's getting really good really fast.
So when do you expect this series to sort of air or be available to watch? Or is it
Well,
too
put it this way.
soon and we don't
If we go
know?
the traditional route, it'll be 2026. If we don't, we'll be waiting around and we'll finally get something. It'll probably be 2025 or 2026 as well. You know, I
Oh, so
mean,
within a few years then,
the
either one.
traditional route will take a long time. The other route, because of the technology, literally in 2 years, it's going to be that good, right? Where you just won't tell and you can tweak it and you don't have to say, oh my God, we need to redo that scene. Listen, if you spend 12 hours in a production day with cast, crew, and the director and the above and below the line, and you end up with 2 minutes of finished product, that's a lot of effort and a lot of money. And then you think, well, I could do this on a computer for a fraction of the cost at a fraction of the time. That's kind of scary. It will happen. And I know Hollywood, the writers, all of the people behind the scenes, the actors, they're all afraid of this, and they should be. Because people want to be entertained. I don't care if, you know, it's this actor or that actor or the director. I don't really care. I mean, listen, I turn on Netflix and it's really good stuff. And many actors I've never even heard of, and they're really good. Now, if you said, well, it wasn't really a live person, it was an AI created person. I'm like, I don't know. I was still entertained, you know, I was still mystified or whatever I watch TV for. Right, I was scared. I was in tears. I was laughing. These things will happen. I mean, we look at AI or computer generated cartoons, and we find humor and emotion in them. The same thing is going to happen with AI generated text to video.
Yeah, there's definitely developments in AI in every single space. And it's just how fast it gets there and how good it's going to be and how, as you said, how cost effective it is. You're already seeing with something similar to what you've said. You know, obviously on Instagram, pretty girls get a lot of attention, don't they? You know, they get hundreds of thousands of followers and, you know, they get DMs and they get deals. A lot of those are AR generated now.
We still
Yeah.
love them.
So it's yeah, it's crazy. But you are starting to see on the other side of AI with videos, etc., is the dark side of AI, where it looks like someone like Jordan Peterson saying something and it's not Jordan Peterson. Alan Watts has got a lot of videos on YouTube and it's not even Alan Watts. And it's where like I'm not an idiot, so I can, well, I say that. Maybe I'm an idiot. I can tell which ones are AI and which aren't at the moment. But will it come to a point where
At the moment.
you will no longer be able to tell the authenticity? And that is a
Right.
scary, scary, scary thing.
Right. I think once the first honestly admitted, here's a fully AI developed series, let's say, right? And people like, they will try to find and poke holes. But if people like it because it was well done, then that opens the floodgates for the next and many more to follow. It's just a matter of time.
It
I
is a
mean,
matter
let's
of time.
when you look at economics and you say, listen, cost and time, what would I rather do? Would I rather spend all this effort, time, and money on the production, or would I spend it, get it there to market much faster and for much less money? And I can tweak it. Let's just say, you know what? I did a sort of a focus group and the ending is not working. Instead of going out and reproducing the production side of it and destination, let me just all fix the computer. Boom, done, matter of days. You know,
It is crazy. So, like I
it's
said, the speed
scary
of
what can
AI
happen.
is as fast as you can write. If I was to put into ChatGPT now, write me a story about X, Y, and Z, or write me a dissertation about the history of the World War One, World War Two, whatever, it'll write me 10,000 words in as fast as it can type.
Yeah.
Whereas with if I
And
was
keep in
to
mind,
do it, sorry, go on.
we're at the infancy of ChatGPT.
Exactly,
I mean, we're
exactly.
starting, right? So that's why I say 2 years from now, if we look at what is happening with text to video, I mean, they're all progressing incredibly fast, and it will just accelerate with future iterations. So I have no doubt that it's a new era and new opportunities for that matter with regard to, you know, video creation and production.
Absolutely. You excited about the venture then, by the sounds of it?
I am. I mean, I'm still going to go and try the traditional route, you know, because I want to see what's out there. But eventually, I think that is inevitably bound to happen. Right. And if I were looking at a future as either an actor or a TV writer or anybody above or below the line in production, I would be scared shitless.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone, apart from those that are running huge multinational companies, are worried about could my job be replaced? Could my job be replaced? And how soon could it be replaced? And they're the
Exactly.
two questions. Because if 50% of businesses or 50% of jobs at businesses get replaced with AI within 2 years, economy's bad because people aren't earning. We're gonna have to have a basic wage or whatever, just to live.
I mean, there's got to be other things that they find to do. I mean, at the end of the day, just like when, you know, the cotton gin came around, they go, oh, it's going to be the end of the world. You know, we don't have people that are in the fields picking and doing the cotton and laborers that are, you know, creating cotton. All of a sudden, that and the printing press, it's the same thing, and the computer. And, you know, I think we have to see. I think we just need to be pragmatic about it. You know, when they say the future and the money is here, but it's not evenly distributed. And I think that's the challenge that we run into is those few on the top are getting richer and the rest of in the middle and the lower are not. And that's a challenge.
It'll always be the case, though. That's the nature of capitalism, is to that it will always be a little bit like that, because of economies of scale. Something we talked about off air, didn't we? About, well, if you're getting one guy 100 grand a year doing cloud solutions or something, and you can get two guys in maybe South America or Asia somewhere for half that price, you will do it, and that just means that more money at the top of
Yeah.
those
Well,
businesses.
let's
And
be clear too. I mean, and when I went back to school, and everybody was like, you know what, I would never offshore. I would just keep it all in. And I'm like, no, you wouldn't, because the minute your competitor or competitors are going somewhere else to get labor less expensive, and this includes AI in this case, then you too will have to compete and do something similar, because otherwise you will go bankrupt. Right? Because at the end of the day, you have to look at the bottom line. And if there's no cash flow, because I'm spending all the money on higher labor, but they're spending it less labor and they are beating me on price, then I'm going to go out of business, you know? So it's a reality of life, sadly.
yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So where can people find this the book at the moment? Is that actually available for purchase at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll give you a website that has all the information. It's mariethestory.com. So www.mariethestory.com. It includes information about the book and obviously a ton of places where to buy it. There's even an audio book. And ironically, when I said to the publisher, I go, "So, do I need to find a voiceover talent?" And she says, "Well, why don't you do it? You've got a pretty good voice." And I'm like, I don't want to sit behind an audio booth for a day. And she goes, "No, you're really good. It'd be a tribute to your dad." And I'm like, all right. So the audio voice is me. It was written by my dad. I'm the audio voice. And the music, the piano transitions, Chopin's piano pieces, are done by my nephew. So the father, the son, and the grandson all collaborate for the audio book. Anyway, mariethestory.com,
The
it
Father, the
also
Son,
has
and the Holy
information.
Ghost.
Exactly. It also has information on the series, Slippin', and then contact information, as well as, my LinkedIn and Facebook and Instagram pages.
Fantastic. Is there any sort of final words or comments you've got for the listeners?
Oh, yeah, just, you know what? Choose love. The final words really are, enjoy what you do, but do it with passion.
Love it. Thank you very much for coming on the show, Henry. If anything, it's I think with podcasts, everyone's a winner. You'll learn something, I'll learn something, the guests will learn something, and I've definitely learned something today. So thanks very much for your time.
That's awesome. Hope so. Thanks, guys. Have a great one.